Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, brought to you from the studios of CBS Interactive. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me as usual, Mumbrella Deputy Editor Camille Alacon.
Hello.
And Scott Rohde of PR agency House Party.
Hey, Tim.
This week, former OMD boss James Greet to take the CEO's seat at Mindshare.
Melbourne's new talkback radio station, MTR, to launch next month. Should 3AW be nervous?
Fairfax set to lose millions in real estate ad revenue.
TEDx, the Ideas Conference, comes to Sydney.
Mumbrella launches TV Ad of the Month.
Campaign Palace appoints its first digital strategist.
And Tourism Australia's new campaign.
Like watching ping pong there with the two of you going like that.
It's the new slick Mumbrella cast.
Was that smooth, Scott?
Let's stay smooth and actually get into talking about things. Now, this one was a fairly surprising announcement. Big move, this. Big move. James Greet, co-owner of recruitment firm The Ladder and former OMD chief executive, coming back to media agency land to head up Mindshare Australia. Now, Camille, big appointment this, probably worth explaining why.
It seems like there's been a bit of a change, really, a changing of the guard at Group M agencies. But first of all, with James Greet himself, so he was pretty much credited with turning around OMD in Australia. He joined in 2004, I believe.
Give or take, yeah. And the agency was at seriously low point at that moment.
Mm. And he pretty much left 2006.
Well, this was the funny thing. I always, because, you know, I've been here in the country sort of 3 years or so, and by the time I arrived, OMD was motoring, Mark Code was leading it, there was a sort of strength in depth of the rest of the management team. And, you know, you really respect what they did, and they absolutely took it forward. But it kind of gradually dawned on me when we talked to people that it was James Greet who started the turnaround. And it always struck me that he left too soon to get the full credit for everything that he'd put in place. So you can kind of see why maybe he'd want to come back and, you know, do it all over again.
Yeah, it seems that way. And as he said to me, that he really still had the passion, the hunger to get back in the industry in the midst of it directly rather than just, you know, through the recruitment side of things. So he's due to start June 1, and he's replacing John Petropoulos. And he's, you know, John has been with Mindshare for about 12 years, and you're seeing with the Group M agencies a real sense of, as I was saying, a changing of the guard.
Yes, yeah, Mediacom as well.
Mediacom, so Toby Jenner's moved up to his national CEO role last year.
Annie Parsons left.
She's left. And we've got Peter Vogel, who joined MEC at the end of 2008. And we have David Gaines, who moved into a new role of national CEO for Maxis last year. Mm.
Yeah, so here's my conspiracy theory that I've just this second thought about. How about John Petropoulos and Annie put together an agency themselves when they're non-competes?
You should suggest that, Tim.
I was sure that Howard Mitchell would bankroll it as well. Right, next topic.
Well, Macquarie Radio and Pacific Star Network's new Melbourne talk station, MTR, is going live April 19. And as we know, it's going to go head-to-head with Fairfax's 3AW. Now it's being led by the former 3AW and 2UE host, Steve Price, who's also going to be the program director. And joining him will be Steve Vizard in mornings, quite a big personality in Melbourne. Afternoons with Chris Smith, who's on 2GB in Sydney already. Drive with Martin King, Money News with Ross Greenwood, also on 2GB. I guess the big question is, you know, the second big commercial talkback radio player in Melbourne, can it actually dent 3AW's stranglehold?
Well, I suppose that's the question, isn't it? Because in Sydney, you have got two, and obviously you've got 2GB, very, very powerful. But here, yeah, 3AW, just looking at the breakfast share, for instance, in the last set of numbers, 17.6%. You know, that was actually down slightly on the 19% before. So, you know, that suggests that there's an audience for good talk radio. And bearing in mind the taking over 3MP, that in that same slot, 1.8%, kind of suggests that, you know, undoubtedly it can move up from that. And actually, if you just look across share across the, you know, the whole day, 14.6%, you know, is again, that's for 3AW versus 2.2% for 3MP. So 3MP, once it's rebadged, you'd think that would move forward quite fast, particularly because of the names and the personalities involved. There's going to be some buzz around it.
Absolutely. I don't know how well Melbourneites will respond to Chris Smith, though, because he, you know, he got through the Christmas party groping incident because he already has a profile in Sydney. So, you know, he had some fans who forgave him, but not having a profile in Melbourne, I don't know if they'll be as forgiving. It should be interesting to see how his time slot goes.
Yes.
He does groping this year, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing was it really ran out in the tabloids, that one as well, didn't it? You know, it was probably not something particularly welcomed by the group. Mm. But,
and I'm wondering, Scott, opportunities for PR?
Obviously, radio stations are a great source for public relations companies to target. Talk radio especially, because it gives, you know, areas for conversation to happen and to see people's reactions. Mm. Another station, yeah. Let's just see what happens, see if it grows in popularity. If it starts to take a share away from, you know, 3AW, then that's what happens.
Well, still in media and still in Melbourne, former Fairfax property editor for The Age and former commercial bigwig as well, Anthony Catalano, known as The Cat, is making his old bosses more than a little nervous with his new venture. Now, it's worth mentioning there was a really good piece in Crikey a few days ago called Who Took Fairfax's Millions, that, credit to them, they really tell the story very well of how they're going to be launching a sort of high-end magazine with lots of property advertising, which will go up against Fairfax's Melbourne Weekly, which is a real real estate advertising driver. You know, numbers of like 4 million a year or something have been bandied around. What's the kind of significance of this move, Camille?
Well, it's significant because Anthony Catalano is partnering up with about 25 of the leading real estate agencies in Melbourne. So think that these real estate advertisers have been using the Melbourne Weekly all these years. They've had the monopoly, Fairfax's title. So what's going to happen if they're all going to be jumping on board this new venture by Catalano? You'd imagine Fairfax is essing their pants.
Mm. Yeah, and some of this, of course, is one of the ways they've made it work is that some of these agents have taken a stake in the business as well. So
yeah, that's right.
You know, so it kind of makes sense for them to say, well, you know, rather than putting our dollars in, you know, in the direction of Fairfax, why not have it for ourselves? You know, which is kind of, you know, I guess a logical question.
And it seems as though, like, his reputation is quite revered in the marketplace, Catalano over there. So it's not just going to be another, you know, he's really thought this through. And so it will be a compelling competitor to the Melbourne Weekly.
They may come to regret making him redundant, I suspect.
Yeah, well, it's, as I said, it was probably the most expensive redundancy in the company's long and checkered history.
Yeah. Now, Scott, I mean, this is such an overused phrase, an overused question,
but
another example of the rivers of gold, classified advertising drying up.
Yep.
Another canary in the coal mine for journalism?
I don't think so. I mean, there is a quote from him where he says, you know, I want to create a product featuring great journalism, which gives readers something that I think is missing in the market. I mean, this is a former journalist leading it, and I think that's fantastic. I mean, it takes the power away from the people who are just caring about the dollars and giving it to the people who know that magazines and are about the reading, you know, the actual writing and what people want to read. And one of the problems is, and I think this is one of the reasons that magazines have been failing a lot and newspapers, is because the standard of journalism's been terrible. And because of that, people don't want to read it anymore. They can go online and get the same news online. But, you know, if you give something compelling to read, they'll keep reading it.
And I suppose the question here is, I kind of think that the content may be the ads to a certain extent. You know, the target is, you know, motivated movers, I suppose. So it's almost, it's a different dynamic to the paid content debate, perhaps.
You can't, I mean, honestly, you can't beat good journalism. And, you know, good grammar, good spelling. Looking at both of you two right now.
Scott, if only you didn't leave journalism, the industry would be saved in one fell swoop.
Maybe I should go back and just show you two up.
Oh, yeah, give us a few tips. Now, look, a lot of us would be familiar with the TED events that are held around the world. TED, which stands for Technology, Entertainment and Design, is launching its first full-scale event in Australia with its offshoot TEDx.
Scott is so enthusiastic about it, he's changed his name to Ted.
To Ted. Scott, what's TED all about? How did it start up?
It started in 1984, I think it was. In the US, obviously technology, entertainment, design, it was designed to bring people together from those areas to discuss and talk, ran events where people could go along and give speeches and, you know, try and inform people, but not just that, is to get people to go creative and to give people ideas and to get things, you know, moving, basically. And it's grown and grown over the years. I think there's now about 400 different TED Talks online. Bill Clinton's given one of the talks, Bill Gates, Jamie Oliver did a great one recently trying to get Americans to realise that there's a severe problem in the US with people eating bad food. I've watched probably about 300 of the 400 TED videos, and they're absolutely compelling videos to watch. I attended the TEDx event last year in Sydney, which was like a half event.
This is the thing, isn't it? That's because it's sort of presenting itself as a launch in Sydney.
But there was one last year.
Yeah.
And the one last year
full-scale event is what they're calling it.
Yeah, the one last year was incredibly disappointing. They had speakers, but it was interspaced with videos that we'd already seen, the Bill Gates one. You know, and you're sitting there going, well, what's the point? If you're going to have this event and you're going to try and inspire people, why are we watching things that we've already seen?
Now, have you done your application to be in the... There's this two-tiered thing, isn't there? There's the live audience,
yes,
or you can go and stand in the foyer outside and watch it streamed on video.
Yeah, well, you may as well just wait and...
Yeah, have you done your application
yet? I've done my application. I must admit, I felt like some kind of child entering a competition, and you don't know what criteria they're going to choose people to attend the event. I personally think they should just put your name down, drawn you from a hat, and let you attend. Given you this whole, what was that?
First in, first served.
Yeah, yeah. Not just first in, first, but like maybe draw people from the hat, or the first 100, and then the next 100 should be drawn or something like that. But the whole process of where they ask you, you know,
prove yourself, prove your worth.
That's exactly what it is. It's prove who you are, prove why you should be attending TEDx.
Isn't that
effing elitist?
Yeah, but isn't it unashamedly elitist?
Well,
that's
no,
my point.
No,
is it,
but
surely that's a good thing.
Well, it is and it isn't. It says on the website, you know, are we elitist? You know, it's not about money, it's not about that kind of thing. But, you know, how can you judge someone literally on three lines? You know, I could have come up with the most...
I could have written complete crap.
I probably did.
It asks for a link to your website as well, though, doesn't it?
It does.
So, you know, presumably, have you given your Twitter profile as your...
No, I just put something else.
What did you put? Come
I'm
on.
Not saying.
Come on, what did you put?
No.
What did you
I'm
put?
I'm not saying.
What did you put?
Did you tell them that you were famous on social media?
I'm not famous on social media. What if they stop saying that? God. I'm not one of those social media guru twats.
Anyway, Ted, I suppose the other
stop calling me Ted.
I know. I'm talking about Ted. It's interesting that the timing is not long after the Battle of the Big Thinking, which is a similar sort of format but more kind of media focused. I suppose the one thing that I noticed, the common thread of both, is Julian Morrow, you know, ex The Chaser or sort of still The Chaser, but not on telly. So yes, he's kind of trying to position himself as the clever comedian, really, isn't he?
Mm.
Isn't that always been his positioning?
He's kind of pushing it more though lately, is he not? He's really, okay. Yeah. He's quite good.
Some of the other interesting speakers are YNR Brand's Nigel Marsh, Google's Lars.
Yeah, no, Nigel Marsh, so man who wrote Fat 40 and Fired, and was also one of the originators of Earth Hour as well.
That's right.
From back in the days when Leo Burnett was going well. Not that it's going terribly now, but probably not quite as high profile. And sorry, who was the other one I talked over? Your
Google.
Yes, Lars...
Rasmussen.
I just did that just to see how you would pronounce it. Yeah, and actually that's one reservation I do have about the speaker list, is I've seen him present a couple of times. He's the guy who's behind Google Wave. Yeah. Very clever man, very fascinating. He's, you know, very passionate about Google Wave.
And
I've seen him present two or three times and stood there scratching my head each time, and that's the difficulty, is getting across something as complex as Google Wave. And I don't know whether it'll be a different presentation to what we've seen before, but that to me will almost be the indicator. If we see that he does a special presentation, he's prepared specially to recognise that TEDx has pretty high standards.
And that's the thing, TED has high standards, you know, and I think that's the speakers last year were okay, but it felt like at times they were trying to sell something, and you know that's not the object of TED. You're not selling anything in TED apart from ideas.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll go along and we'll see. Unless we might go along.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've been approved.
And frankly, I'm not standing in no stinking lobby.
No. I'll wait till the video comes out.
Now, Mumbrella has launched its own new thing this week, which is the Mumbrella TV Ad of the Month Award. Camille, tell us what.
Pretty simple. We just want to recognise Australia's best TV ads. So each month there'll be a selection process, as voted by Mumbrella readers and will be revealed on an episode of The Mumbo Report. There'll be a monthly shortlist drawn up on the basis of self-nomination and our own selection at Mumbrella. And entries are now open for Best Ad for March. Basically, the ad must have been aired first, initially in March.
In the previous month, and tell us about your favourite telly ad.
I mean, I think you guys are missing a slight trick here. Can I just be honest?
Yeah, do. Yes. You're here to be that slightly critical voice.
Hi, I'm critical.
Enter.
Yeah, the fact that it's TV ad of the month and you guys are completely missing out online seems a bit strange.
Yeah, no, very fair point.
you know, seeing as a lot of people are on there watching ads.
I'm totally with you. I would love to do an ad of the month award for every single category. That sort of thing is done through the support of sponsors.
Yep.
It so happens that our first sponsor is Dubsat, who wants to send the message that they're involved in helping people get TV ad from agency to broadcaster.
Okay.
So they want to sponsor that. Love to do an online one, love to do print, love to do radio. Come and talk to us. And if you can help us do it, then we'll happily do it.
That was fantastic watching you flog your wares there, Tim. actually, we're talking about kind of online ads. I've noticed your BAM campaign that...
Yes!
I know I'm kind of going off kilter here, but...
Yeah, no, let's talk about that. So this is one that's BAMercise.
Yeah.
BAMercise is the name of the website, which hasn't launched yet. But this idea that, you know, BAM and the fat is gone or something like that. So it's a little viral at the moment. Features a once thin and neurotic housewife who spent her whole time cleaning and lost weight as a result or kept the weight off. 18 months later is a fat housewife because BAM makes life easy. That appears to be the theme.
All the women I've been with have watched it have all been appalled. Absolutely, like, thinking it's just basically saying, oh, women are housewives, women do all the cleaning, when you've got BAM, you become fat. And they were like, I can't believe it. And two of them said, I will not buy that product again. I should also put a disclaimer out here that...
The campaign's not launched yet, so you're judging a lot by one,
But also, my best friend is the BAM man.
Really?
Yes.
Do tell.
Martin Grellis is one of my best friends in Australia.
Is he a real person?
Yeah, he's one of my best friends.
I assumed he was played by an actor.
No, he's the real man.
Okay, well, we'll listen to a quick clip from Martin Grellis.
Hi, Martin Grellis here with an amazing product from Easy Off BAM. Grimy tiles, stained toilet, some products just run over the stains. Easy Off BAM Stain and Toilet's unique formula is thick, so it clings to vertical surfaces for longer, giving you a powerful clean. This amazing formula also unblocks drains and removes odours. Toilets, tiles, drains and surfaces all with one product. And there's Easy Off BAM Stain and Mould. It powers through stains, mould and mildew. BAM! And the dirt is gone.
So, Martin Grellis is your mate?
Yeah.
From what?
I met Martin online? 6 years ago when I was a barman in Australia, and he was a barman, and he's an actor, so he's in The Matrix as a helicopter pilot. He's
the barman was in The Matrix. We're through the rabbit hole, folks.
We became friends, and he's, you know, I've spent a lot of time when he moved up to Queensland recently, and I drove him up with him and I did a road trip up there and all that kind of stuff. And
does he get recognised?
Yeah, he does. I've been out in pubs and people run up to him and they're like, you're the BAM man. And I'm like, oh God, no. So there you go. He's a real man.
Excellent.
Hi, Martin.
Well, still on advertising, the Campaign Palace Sydney has appointed its first digital strategist, Saatchi & Saatchi's Megan Hales. I suppose my one slight surprise, as much as anything... Scott was I surprised myself when we discovered that this was a new position, that they didn't actually already have a digital strategist until now.
They would have. I mean, really.
So they had digital people, but not a digital strategist.
Yeah. Digital creative production, but not a strategist.
Which is a bit worrying because you need a strategy before you need a creative and everything else.
So, is this a one-off for the Campaign Palace, or do we think there are actually a lot of ad agencies out there who, you know, who really haven't engaged with digital at that sort of level?
I think there are a few. I think some of them think they're doing it, but they're really not. It's probably the best way I can say it. They need to do it. You need to get the strategy right first and foremost, you know, and you can't just take an offline strategy and put it online. It doesn't always work.
Camille, your thoughts?
Well, they've got one now, so good on them.
Wow. Thanks for that thought.
That's very positive. Right, Tourism Australia. We didn't do a podcast last week because of the Easter break, so this is why we're covering a story which is a few days older than usual. So after Where the Bloody Hell Are Ya? Comes
great,
there's
great
nothing
accent.
Thank you very much for that. That was me doing Lara Bingo, in case you
really God,
that
I was
is how
say,
she sounds.
I was so about to say something else that we'd end up in court for.
Anyway, the new line is there's nothing like Australia, created by DDB. It's already been generating some talk. Camille, the campaign.
Yeah, this seems to be more a very interactive campaign, and they're calling it the user-assisted campaign as opposed to user-generated content. So basically, initially it's asking the Australian public to upload photos of their favourite Australian experiences and explaining in 15 words why there's nothing like ... That's the first stage of the campaign.
Can I just jump in there? The moment you get people to give you something that they've created, that's user-generated content.
Their argument, I was at the press conference, they would make the point that because they moderate and they have control before it goes up, therefore they're not seeking user-generated content, they're seeking user-assisted content.
Yeah, that's bollocks. I'm sorry. If you've got content from someone that you're going to use, that's user-generated. That user has generated that content for you. Just because you're moderating doesn't mean it's not user-generated content.
Does the name user-generator, or the implications around it are, put anything you want up?
No. See, that's never been... Only a stupid organisation would allow that to happen, because you'd be looking at massive brand damage. You've got the possibility. Look at what happened to the Chevy Tahoe when they gave people all the videos and said, create your own videos. And then suddenly all these people were like, you're destroying the world with your giant vehicles. Mm. You know, you have to moderate, you know.
I wonder whether some of it, because there's obviously a lot of nervousness and fear over PR backlash, because it's such a political, you know, it's just a massive hot potato doing that sort of campaign. The politicians get nervous, massively hard work for the agency to get anything through.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, all of the kind of sort of hurdles they've got to go across. So you can kind of almost see why it was nice for them to have an answer when they were asked at the press conference, well, isn't this user-generated content? Can't that be trouble? The fact that they could come straight back and say, oh, no, it's user-assisted content.
Yeah, it's so user-generated. It's just...
But it was a good PR line.
Yeah, it's a marketing bump, but yeah. And the campaign's good. I mean, look, you can't please everybody with this one, you know. That's the thing about, you've got 22 million people in Australia and everyone has got an opinion what Australia means to them.
Well, what about the positioning? So not so much the campaign, but the positioning. This, there's nothing like Australia. Do you like that, Camille? Do you think that gives a springboard to do things?
I was struggling to actually remember the line, to be honest with you. I didn't think it was, the line itself was particularly catchy.
Generic.
It just feels generic, the line.
I do understand the agency went through a lot of lines. but they got there in the end.
Oh, excellent.
DDB lawyers, hello.
So basically the images will be tagged by subject and location. As we said, after being moderated, and will be searchable on the Tourism Oz website. And they'll form the basis of the ads that will follow on digital TV and print.
And this is the other issue, isn't it? These images, you know, the idea that there might be hundreds of thousands of them in time. The small print terms and conditions imply that basically you're handing over all of your rights to the image to Tourism Australia. Now, Scott, where does that sit within social media?
Well, it's a tough one. I mean, I can play on both sides here, but from a content perspective, if you create content and somebody uses it to promote something, then you should be rewarded for that. You know, I mean, when it boils down to it. Unless it's a competition,
which it sort of is, because there will be winners. There'll be
people getting holidays. but they can use any of a person's content. So you know, they might decide that there's 10 winners, but they use 100 images. And you know, is that fair? I don't think so, because you're using it to promote something. That's when I'm putting my creator hat on. When you come at it from the other angle, you've got to say, well, at what point, you know, should you not be able to use something if it's a good image? Should you not? And you are running the campaign. These people are agreeing to take part in it. And the problem is the T&Cs should be very easy to read and simple for people to understand. That's the basis of it.
My instinct is that the Creative Commons license might carry some of the answer. Mm. My problem is I don't understand enough about Creative Commons, which is why I will go along to Social Media Club Sydney in a couple of weeks' time or so, discussing that very thing.
Well, funnily enough, at Digital Citizens, we've just got...
plug your own event.
Yeah, well, hey, PR. But Digital Citizens, which is on Monday night, Tuesday night, sorry, 13th. I keep thinking it's Monday. We actually got their new kind of avatar, this little cute robot, through a Creative Commons license. So somebody we found it online. We approached the person in Europe, and they said, "Yeah, you can use it." So you know, and that's kind of good thing that Creative Commons allows sharing, which is obviously what it should be about. But when it's in a commercial factor, that's where things change.
Okay.
Well, interestingly as well, there'll be a TVC that's going to be directed by Michael Gracie of
bit of a talent,
Evian Babies ad fame.
Yes, the breakdancing babies.
Yeah, it's had more than 20 million views on YouTube, and also the new Lipton Ice Tea ad featuring Hugh Jackman. But anyway, we'll see how that pans out. But finally, here's why British sports commentary is so brilliant.
Dylan, we're off to Fratton Park, where there's been a red card. But for who, Chris Kamara?
I don't know, Jeff, has there? I must have missed that. Red card.
Chris, have you not been watching? I haven't. I don't know where that's come from, Chris. I have no idea what has happened there. What's happened, Chris?
I don't know, Jeff. I don't know. The rain must have got in my eyes, Jeff.
Yeah. Chris, let me tell you, according to our sources, Anthony van den Boer has been sent off for a second bookable offence. Get your fingers out and count up the number of Portsmouth players who are on the field.
No, you're right. I saw him go off, and I thought they were bringing a sub on, Jeff.
That's professionalism, I can't be.
Still nil-nil.
Cutting edge reports on Gillette Soccer Saturday.
What's the bar like?
No substitute. Now, look, not...
Now, Tim, what was that all about?
Right, this is something that you kind of have to have watched sports TV in the UK to get a sense of it. I absolutely used to love Saturday mornings and Saturday afternoons in the UK in front of the television, and the campaign is underway, by the way, to bring some of this to Australian television. Two programmes, the brilliant Soccer AM, followed by Soccer Saturday, which is because of the rights issues, you can't show the game live. So they would go around the various grounds where you would cut to the commentator standing on the edge of the pitch, so you could see a tiny corner of green in the corner where you might just see like a leg come in or something once in a while, updating the crew on what was going on at the ground.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, I actually love it as well. It's one of those things. It's an institution. It's one of the differences I find over in Australia to the UK, which is why I'm not sure it would work over here so well, is because all the football games here are at night. And in the UK, sport is every... You get up on a Saturday morning, you know, you meet the boys, a couple of beers in the pub, straight to the game, you know, and then you're out afterwards.
I suppose the thing is, personally... If they had, if they streamed Soccer AM, because obviously you know, the English Premier League is massive on Sky Sports. Yeah. If they streamed that before matches, I would stop going out on a Saturday night.
Yeah, I would as well.
And,
great.
And I think many soccer fans would. Now,
it's football, not soccer.
Well, I should, but it's called Soccer AM. You know,
I know,
that's
but
the question
show.
I pose to football. You, seeing as they don't call it soccer in the UK.
I think it's a snappier name, isn't it? Okay. So it's worth mentioning, sister site of Mumbrella, Footy Fans Down Under, have launched the Facebook campaign to bring Soccer AM to Australia. My sense is there might be some horrible rights management issues involved because of the, you know, footage
possibly.
Games.
But it'd be amazing if it was. I mean, I'd be sorted. It's football, you know. When it boils down to it, it's the best game in the world.
Well, that's it for now. Thank you to my co-hosts, Camille Alacon and Scott Rohde, and to CBS Interactive for use of their studio. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle pip. We ready?
Yeah.
Rolling? All good?
Yeah.
Cool. Here we go. Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, brought to you from the studios of Actually, sorry, my headphones are much too loud. I'm kind of deafening myself. Dum, 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 dum. Here we go.
You need to shave your beard.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
A bit scraggly.
great. I've only got to sit on in front of a stage in front of 450 people later. Thank you for that.